They had breakfast in a forest clearing. It was grilled pumpkin. The dwarf bread was brought out for inspection. But it was miraculous, the dwarf bread. No one ever went hungry when they had some dwarf bread to avoid. You only had to look at it for a moment, and instantly you could think of dozens of things you'd rather eat. Your boots, for example. Mountains, raw sheep, your own foot. Then they tried to get some sleep. At least Nanny and Magrat did. But all it meant was that they lay awake and listened to Granny Weatherwax muttering under her breath. They'd never seen her so upset. Afterwards, Nanny suggested that they walk for a while. It was a nice day, she said. This was an interesting kind of forest, she said, with lots of new herbs which could do with being looked at. Everyone would feel better for a stroll in the sunshine, she said. It'd improve their tempers. And it was indeed a nice forest. After half an hour or so, even Granny Weatherwax was prepared to admit that in certain respects it wasn't totally foreign and shoddy. Magrat wandered off the path occasionally picking flowers. Nanny even sang a few verses of "A Wizard's Staff Has a Knob on the End," with no more than a couple of token protests from the other two. But there was still something wrong. Nanny Ogg and Magrat could feel something between them and Granny Weatherwax, some sort of mental wall, something important deliberately hidden and unsaid. Witches usually had few secrets from one another, if only because they were all so nosy that there was never any chance to have secrets. It was worrying. And then they turned a corner by a stand of huge oak trees and met the little girl in the red cloak. She was skipping along in the middle of the path, singing a song that was simpler and a good deal cleaner than any in Nanny Ogg's repertoire. She didn't see the witches until she was almost on top of them. She stopped and then smiled innocently.
"Hello, old woman," she said.
said Magrat. Granny Weatherwax bent down.
"What are you doing out in the forest all by yourself, young lady?"
"I'm taking this basket of goodies to my granny," said the girl.
Granny straightened up, a faraway look in her eyes.
"Esme," said Nanny Ogg urgently.
I know,
said Granny. Magrat leaned down and set her face in the idiot grimace generally used by adults who love to be good with children and don't stand a dog's chance of ever achieving it.
Tell me, miss, did your mother tell you to watch out for any bad wolves that might happen to be in the vicinity?"
"That's right."
"And your granny," said Nanny Ogg, "I guess she's a bit bedbound at the moment, right?"
"That's why I'm taking her this basket of goodies," the child began.
"Thought so."
"Do you know my granny?" said the child.
"Yes," said Granny Weatherwax. "In a way."
"It happened over Scundway when I was a girl," said Nanny Ogg quietly. "They never even found the gran..."
"And where is your granny's cottage, little girl?"
said Granny Weatherwax loudly, nudging Nanny sharply in the ribs. The girl pointed up a sidetrack.
"You're not the Wicked Witch, are you?" she said.
Nanny Ogg coughed.
"Me? No, we're...
Granny began.
"Fairies," said Magrat.
Granny Weatherwax's mouth dropped open. Such an explanation would never have occurred to her.
"Only my mummy warned me about the Wicked Witch, too," said the girl. She gave Magrat a sharp look.
"What kind of fairies?"
"Flower fairies," said Magrat. "Look, I've got a wand."
"Which ones?"
What?"
"Which flowers?"
Said Magrat. "Well, I'm, Fairy Tulip, and that's..."
She avoided looking directly at Granny.
"Fairy Daisy, and this is..."
"Fairy Hedgehog,"
said Nanny Ogg. This addition to the supernatural pantheon was given due consideration.
"You can't be a fairy hedgehog," said the child, after some thought. "A hedgehog's not a flower."
"How do you know?"
"'Cause it's got spikes."
"So's holly. And thistles."
"Oh."
"And I've got a wand," said Magrat.
Only now did she risk a look at Fairy Daisy.
"And we ought to be getting along," said Granny Weatherwax. "You just stay here with Fairy Tulip, I think it was, and we'll just go and make sure your granny's all right."
"All right."
"I bet it's not a real wand," said the child, ignoring her, and facing Magrat with a child's unerring ability to find a weak link in any chain.
"I bet it can't turn things into things."
"Well,"
Magrat began.
"I bet," said the girl, "I bet you can't turn that tree stump over there into a pumpkin." "Ha ha, bet you anything you can't. Bet you $1 trillion that you can't turn that stump into a pumpkin."
"I can see the two of you are going to get along fine," said Fairy Hedgehog. "We won't be long."
Two broomsticks skimmed low above the forest path.
"Could be just a coincidence," said Nanny Og.
"Tain't," said Granny. "The child even had a red cloak on."
"I had a red cloak when I was 15, said Nanny.
"Yes, but your granny lived next door. You didn't have to worry about wolves when you visited her," said Granny.
"Except old Sumpkins the lodger."
"Yes, but that was just a coincidence."
A trail of blue smoke drifted among the trees ahead of them. Somewhere away to one side there was the sound of a falling tree.
"Woodcutters," said Nanny. "It's all right if there's woodcutters. One of them rushes in and...
"That's only what children get told," said Granny as they sped onwards. "Anyway, that's no good to the grandmother, is it? She's already been at."
"I always hated that story," said Nanny. "No one ever cares what happens to the poor defenceless old women."
The path vanished abruptly on the edge of a glade. Hemmed in by the trees was a straggly kitchen garden in which a few pathetic storks fought for what little sun there was. In the middle of the garden was what had to be a thatched cottage because no one would build a haystack that badly. They leapt off the broomsticks, leaving them to drift to a halt in the bushes, and hammered on the cottage door.
"We could be too late," said Nanny. "The wolf might..."
After a while there was the muffled sound of someone shuffling across the floor within, and then the door opened a crack. A suspicious eye was visible in the gloom.
"Yes?"
said a small and quavering voice from somewhere beneath the eye.
"Are you grandmother?" Granny Weatherwax demanded.
"Are you the tax gatherers, dear?"
"No, ma'am. We're,
fairies," said Fairy Hedgehog quickly.
"I don't open the door to people I don't know, dear," said the voice, and then it took on a slightly petulant tone. "Especially people who never does the washing up even after I leaves out a bowl of nearly fresh milk for them."
"We'd like to talk to you for a few minutes," said Fairy Daisy.
"Yes. Have you got any identification, dear?"
"I know we've got the right grandmother," said Fairy Hedgehog. "There's a family likeness. She's got big ears."
"Look, it's not her that's got the big ears," snapped Fairy Daisy. "It'll be the wolf that's got the big ears. That's the whole point. Don't you ever pay attention?"
The grandmother watched them with interest. After a lifetime of believing in them, she was seeing fairies for the first time, and it was an experience. Granny Weatherwax caught her perplexed expression.
"Put it like this, ma'am," she said, in a despotically reasonable tone of voice. "How would you like to be eaten alive by a wolf?"
I don't think I'd like that, dear, no,"
said the hidden grandmother.
"The alternative's us," said Granny.
"Lawks, are you sure?"
"On our word, as fairies," said Fairy Hedgehog.
"Well, really? All right, you can come in, but none of your tricks, and mind you do the washing up. You haven't got a pot of gold about you, have you?"
"That's pixies, isn't it?"
"No, they're the ones in wells. It's goblins, she means."
"Don't be daft, they're the ones you get under the bridges."
"That's trolls. Everyone knows that's trolls."
Well, not us, anyway."
"Oh,"
said the grandmother.
"I might have known."
Magrat liked to think she was good with children, and worried that she wasn't. She didn't like them very much, and worried about this too. Nanny Og seemed to be effortlessly good with children by alternately and randomly giving them either a sweet or a thick ear, while Granny Weatherwax ignored them for most of the time, and that seemed to work just as well. Whereas Magrat cared. It didn't seem fair.
"Bet you $1 trillion zillion you can't turn that bush into a pumpkin," said the child.
"But, look, all the others got turned into pumpkins," Magrat pointed out.
"It's bound not to work sooner or later," said the child, placidly.
Magrat looked helplessly at the wand. She tried everything, wishing, sub-vocalising, and even when she thought the other witches were out of earshot, banging it against things and shouting, "Anything but pumpkins!"
"You don't know how to do it, really, do you?"
stated the child.
"Tell me," said Magrat, "you said your mummy knows about the big bad wolf in the woods, didn't you?"
"That's right.
But nevertheless, she sent you out by yourself to take those goodies to your granny."
"That's right. Why?"
"Nothing. Just thinking. And you owe me a million trillion zillion squillion dollars."
There's a certain Freemasonry about grandmothers, with the added benefit that no one has to stand on one leg or recite any oaths in order to join. Once inside the cottage, and with a kettle on the boil, Nanny Ogg was quite at home. Grebo stretched out in front of the meagre fire and dozed off as the witches tried to explain.
"I don't see how a wolf can get in here, dear," said the grandmother kindly. "I mean, they're wolves. They can't open doors."
Granny Weatherwax twitched aside a rag of curtain and glared out at the clearing.
"We know," she said.
Nanny Ogg nodded towards the little bed in an alcove by the fireplace.
"Is that where you always sleep?" she said.
"When I'm feeling poorly, dear. Other times I sleeps in the attic."
"I should get along up there now if I was you, and take my cat up with you, will you? We don't want him getting in the way."
"Is this the bit where you clean the house and do all the washing for a saucer of milk?"
said the grandmother, hopefully.
"Could be. You never know."
"Funny, dear. I was expecting you to be shorter."
"We get out in the fresh air a lot," said Nanny. "Off you go now."
That left the two of them. Granny Weatherwax looked around the cave-like room. The rushes on the floor were well on the way to composthood. Soot encrusted the cobwebs on the ceiling. The only way the housework could be done in this place was with a shovel, or for preference, a match.
"Funny, really," said Nanny, when the old woman had climbed the rickety stairs. "She's younger than me. Mind you, I take exercise."
"You never took exercise in your life," said Granny Weatherwax, still watching the bushes. "You never did anything you didn't want to do."
"That's what I mean," said Nanny happily. "Look, Esme, I still say this could all be just—"
"It ain't. I can feel the story. Someone's been making stories happen in these parts. I know it."
"And you know who, too, don't you, Esme?"
said Nanny slyly. She saw Granny look around wildly at the grubby walls.
"I reckon she's too poor to afford a mirror," said Nanny. "I ain't blind, Esme, and I know mirrors and fairy godmothers go together. So, what's going on?"
"I ain't saying. I don't want to look a fool if I'm wrong. I am not going to—" "There's something coming."
Nanny Ogg pressed her nose against the dirty window.
"Can't see anything."
"The bushes moved. Get into the bed."
"Me? I thought it was you who was going into the bed."
"Can't imagine why you'd think that."
No, come to think of it, neither can I," said Nanny wearily.
She picked up the floppy mob cap from the bedpost, put it on, and slid under the patchwork quilt.
"Here, this mattress is stuffed with straw."
"You won't have to lie on it for long.
It prickles, and I think there's things in it."
Something bumped against the wall of the house. The witches fell silent. There was a snuffling noise under the back door.
"You know," whispered Nanny as they waited, "the scullery's terrible. There's no firewood, there's hardly any food, and there's a jug of milk that's practically on the march."
Granny sidled quickly across the room to the fireplace, and then back to her station by the front door. After a moment, there was a scrabbling at the latch, as if it was being operated by someone who was unfamiliar either with doors or with fingers. The door creaked open slowly. There was an overwhelming smell of musk and wet fur. Uncertain footsteps tottered across the floor and towards the figure huddling under the bedclothes. Nanny raised the mob cap's floppy frill just enough to see out.
"Watcher," she said, and then, "Oh, blimey, I never realised you had teeth that big."
Granny Weatherwax pushed the door shut and stepped forward briskly. The wolf spun around, a paw raised protectively.
"No!"
Granny hesitated for a second, and then hit it very hard on the head with a cast-iron frying pan. The wolf crumpled. Nanny Ogg swung her legs out of the bed.
When it happened over Scundway, they said it was a werewolf or something, and I thought, no, werewolves aren't like that, she said. I never thought it was a real wolf. Gave me quite a turn, that.
Real wolves don't walk on their hind legs and open doors, said Granny Weatherwax. Come on, help me get it outside.
Took me right back, seeing a great big hairy slathering thing heading towards me, said Nanny, picking up one end of the stunned creature. Did you ever meet old Sumpkins? It was indeed a normal-looking wolf, except that it was a lot thinner than most. Ribs showed plainly under the skin and the fur was matted. Granny hauled a bucket of cloudy water from the well next to the privy and poured it over its head. Then she sat down on a tree stump and watched it carefully. A few birds sang high in the branches.
It spoke, she said. It tried to say no.
I wondered about that, said Nanny. Then I thought maybe I was imagining things.
No point in imagining anything, said Granny. Things are bad enough as they are.
The wolf groaned. Granny handed the frying pan to Nanny Ogg. After a while she said, I think I'm going to have a look inside its head.
Nanny Ogg shook her head. Ah, I wouldn't do that if I was you.
I'm the one who's me, and I've got to know. Just you stand by with the frying pan.
Nanny shrugged. Granny concentrated. It is very difficult to read a human mind. Most humans are thinking about so many things at any given moment that it is almost impossible to pick out one stream in the flood. Animal minds are different, far less cluttered. Carnivore minds are easiest of all, especially before meals. Colours don't exist in the mental world, but if they did, a hungry carnivore mind would be hot and purple and sharp as an arrow. And herbivore minds are simple too, coiled silver springs poised for flight. But this wasn't any kind of normal mind. It was two minds. Granny had sometimes picked up the mind of hunters in the forest, when she was sitting quietly of an evening and letting her mind wander. Just occasionally they felt like this, or at least like a faint shadow of this. Just occasionally, when the hunter was about to make a kill, the random streams of thought came together. But this was different. This was the opposite. This was cracked and crippled attempts at cogitation peeling away from the sleek arrowhead of a predatory intent. This was a predatory mind trying to think. No wonder it was going mad. She opened her eyes. Nanny Ogg held the frying pan over her head. Her arm trembled.
Well, she said, who's there?
I could do with a glass of water, said Granny.
Natural caution surfaced through the turmoil of her mind.
Only not out of that well, mind you.
Nanny relaxed a little. When a witch started rummaging in someone else's mind, you could never be sure who was coming back. But Granny Weatherwax was the best. Magrat might always be trying to find herself, but Granny didn't even understand the idea of the search. If she couldn't find the way back to her own head, there wasn't a path.
There's that milk in the cottage, Nanny volunteered.
What colour was it again?
Well, still fairly white.
Okay.
When Nanny Ogg's back was safely turned, Granny permitted herself a small shudder. She stared at the wolf, wondering what she could do for it. A normal wolf wouldn't enter a cottage, even if it could open the door. Wolves didn't come near humans at all, except if there were a lot of them and it was the end of a very hard winter. And they didn't do that because they were big and bad and wicked, but because they were wolves. This wolf was trying to be a human. There was probably no cure.
Here's your milk, said Nanny Ogg.
Granny reached up and took it without looking.
Someone made this wolf think it was a person, she said. They made it think it was a person, and then they didn't think any more about it. It happened a few years ago.
How do you know?
I've got its memories, said Granny,
and instinct too, she thought. She knew it'd be some days before she'd stop wanting to chase sledges over the snow.
Oh!
It's stuck between species, in its head.
Can we help it? Said Nanny.
Granny shook her head.
It's gone on for too long. It's habit now, and it's starving. It can't go one way, it can't go the other. It can't act like a wolf, and it can't manage being a human. And it can't go on like it is.
She turned to face Nanny for the first time. Nanny took a step back.
You can't imagine how it feels, she said. Wandering around for years, not capable of acting human and not able to be a wolf. You can't imagine how that feels.
"I reckon maybe I can," said Nanny. "In your face, maybe I can." "Who'd do that to a creature?"
"I've got my suspicions."
They looked around. Magrat was approaching with the child. Beside them walked one of the woodcutters.
"Eh?" said Granny. "Yes, of course, there's always got to be," she spat the words, "a happy ending."
A paw tried to grip her ankle. Granny Weatherwax looked down into the wolf's face.
"Please," it growled, "an ending. Now."
She knelt down and took the paw. "Yes," she said.
"Yes."
She stood up again, all authority, and beckoned to the approaching trio.
"Mr. Woodcutter," she said, "a job for you."
The woodcutter never understood why the wolf laid its head on the stump so readily, or why the old woman, the one in whom anger roiled like a pearl barley in a bubbling stew, insisted afterwards that it be buried properly instead of skinned and thrown in the bushes. She'd been very insistent about that. And that was the end of the big bad wolf. It was an hour later. Quite a few of the woodcutters had wandered up to the cottage, where there seemed to be a lot of interesting activity going on. Woodcutting is not a job that normally offers much in the way of diversion. Magrat was washing the floor with as much magical assistance as could be afforded by a bucket of soapy water and a scrubbing brush. Even Nanny Ogg, whose desultory interest in the proud role of housewife had faded completely just as soon as her eldest daughter was old enough to hold a duster, was cleaning the walls. The old grandmother, who wasn't entirely in touch with events, was anxiously following both of them around with a saucer of milk. Spiders, who had inherited the ceiling for generations, were urged gently but firmly out of the door. And Granny Weatherwax was walking around the clearing with the head woodcutter, a barrel-chested man who clearly thought he looked better in his studded leather wristlets than was in fact the case.
"It's been around for years, right?" he said. "Always lurking around the edges of villages and that."
"And you never tried talking to it?"
"Talk to it? It's a wolf, right? And you don't talk to wolves. Animals can't talk."
"I see. And what about the old woman? There's a lot of you woodcutters. Did you ever, you know, did you ever drop in to see her?"
"Huh. No fear."
"Why?"
The head woodcutter leaned forward conspiratorially.
"Well, they say she's a witch, right?"
"Really?" said Granny. "How do you know?"
"She's got all the signs, right?"
"What signs are those?"
The woodcutter was pricked by a slight uneasiness.
"Well, she lives all by herself in the wood, right?"
"Yes."
And she's got a hook nose, and she's always muttering to herself."
"Yes."
"And she's got no teeth, right?"
"Lawks," said Granny. "I can see where you wouldn't want to be having with the likes of her, right?"
"Right," said the woodcutter, relieved.
"Quite likely turn you into just about anything as soon as look at you, right?"
Granny stuck her finger in her ear and twiddled it reflectively.
"They can do that, you know."
"I bet they can, I bet they can," said Granny. "Makes me glad there's all you big strong lads around. Can I have a look at your chopper, young man?"
He handed over his axe. Granny sagged dramatically as she grasped it. There were still traces of wolf blood on the blade.
"Deary me, it's a big one," she said. "And you're good with this, I expect."
"Won the silver belt 2 years running at the Forest Revels," said the woodcutter proudly.
Two years running, Lawks, that is good. That's very good. And here's me hardly able to lift it."
Granny grasped the axe in one hand and swung it inexpertly. The woodcutter jumped backwards as the blade whirred past his face and then buried itself a quarter of an inch deep in a tree.
"Oh, sorry about that," said Granny Weatherwax. "Aren't I a daft old woman? Never was any good with anything technical."
He grinned at her and tried to pull the axe free. He sank to his knees, his face suddenly white. Granny leaned down until she was level with his ear.
"You could have seen to the old woman," she said quietly. "You could have talked to the wolf. But you didn't, right?"
He tried to speak, but his teeth didn't seem to want to part.
"I can see you're very sorry about all that," she said. "I can see you're seeing the error of your ways. I bet you can't wait to be up and repairing her cottage for her and getting the garden back in good order and seeing she has fresh milk every day and a good supply of wood, right? In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if you wasn't generous enough to build her a new cottage with a proper well and all. Somewhere near the village so she don't have to live alone, right? You know, I can see a future sometimes and I just know what's going to happen, right?"
Sweat ran off his face. Now his lungs didn't seem to be operating either.
"And I knows you're going to keep your word and I'm so pleased about it that I'm going to make sure you're especially lucky," said Granny, her voice still in the same pleasant monotone. "I knows it can be a dangerous job, wood chopping. People can get hurt. Trees can accidentally fall on them. Or the top of their chopper can suddenly come off and cut their head open."
The woodcutter shuddered as Granny went on.
"So what I'm going to do is a little spell to make sure that none of this happens to you, on account of me being so grateful because of you helping the old lady, right? Just nod."
He managed to move his head a fraction. Granny Weatherwax smiled.
"There," she said, standing up and brushing a speck of leaf mould off her dress. "You see how sweet life can be if we all helps one another."
The witches left around lunchtime, but then the old woman's garden was full of people, and the air with the sound of sawing and hammering. News like Granny Weatherwax travelled fast. 3 woodcutters were digging over the vegetable plot, 2 more were fighting to clean the chimney, and 4 of them were halfway down a new well that was being dug with impressive speed. The old grandmother, who was still the kind of person who hangs on to one idea until another one dislodges it by force, was running out of saucers to put the milk in. The witches sneaked away in all the busyness.
"There," said Magrat, as they strolled down the path, "it just goes to show how people will pitch in and help if only someone sets an example. You don't have to bully people all the time, you know."
Nanny Og glanced at Granny.
"I saw you talking to the head woodcutter," she said. "What was you talking about?"
"Sawdust," said Granny.
"Oh, yes.
One of the woodcutters told me," said Magrat, "that there's been other odd things happening in this forest. Animals acting human, he said. There used to be a family of bears living not far away."
"Nothing unusual about a family of bears living together," said Nanny. "They're very convivial animals."
"In a cottage?"
"That's unusual."
"That's what I mean," said Magrat.
"You definitely feel a bit awkward about going round to borrow a cup of sugar," said Nanny. "I expect the neighbours had something to say about it."
"Yes," said Magrat. "They said oink."
"What'd they say oink for?"
"Because they couldn't say anything else. They were pigs."
"We had people like that next door when we lived at—" Nanny began.
"I mean pigs, you know, 4 legs, curly tail. What pork is before it's pork. Pigs."
"Can't see anyone letting pigs live in a cottage," said Granny.
"He said they didn't. The pigs built their own. There were 3 of them. Little pigs."
"What happened to them?" said Nanny.
"The wolf ate them. They were the only animals stupid enough to let him get near them, apparently. Nothing was found of them except their spirit level."
"That's a shame."
"The woodcutter says they didn't build very good houses, mind you."
"Well, it's only to be expected, what with the trotters and all," said Nanny.
"He says the roof leaks something dreadful right over his bed.